an empty convoy to come back. As you say, you delivered one and picked the other one up.
Yes, we bring one back until we get roughed to Iceland, and then the local Icelandic force takes over and sees them to Iceland, Greenock, out into Atlantic, and we would normally go back to the old Scapa Flow.
So you have these two convoys, one out, one back, and under attack of one sort or another, on duty for long periods of time. You must have been pretty exhausted by the time it was you got up back.
I suppose we were, but we never seemed to show it somehow. Now, the empty convoy coming back was never molested, because there was nothing in the ships. It was the outgoing ones. No, I can't say. This may explain better. So when we come back, we turned over to Iceland. We oiled in Iceland at Reykjavik, come down to Scapa Flow. And as we come into Scapa Flow, we thought, here's all these ships with all the crews on the upper deck. And when we got alongside, there were three cheers. You know, we're thinking, what the hell is this for? You know, we didn't realise they'd been informed that we'd been successful with the convoy. So Onslow says to me, he says, Mac, you know, a yeoman, what do we do? I says, oh, let's cheer back. So we cheer back at them. Well, that was that. Into the fleet anchorage and ammunition and et cetera, oil again and food. Now, as regards being tired, this raised a very point I raised. Every so often we used to, all the yeomen of the signals used to get together and have a little chinwag about how we can cut signals down by sharp to the point and not spell ships' names out. This was amongst ourselves. And I remember raising the point with the fleet signal officer. I suppose I shouldn't have done, but when you were in there, if anyone had anything to read, you would say to the officer, can we forget what we've got in our sleeve? This is off the cuff. And I raised the point, and when we come out, I said, why do you have exercises for flags and lights when we come back off a 3-week convoy? Because I said, your signalmen are based on a ship that never moves, the depot ship. I said, we've been signalling constantly for 3 weeks. We don't need your exercises. So that was more or less stopped. Now, you have in the Navy is what is called in peacetime a manoeuvring board, where you have 12 little ships, the same as you do in the parade ground. And each ship in row makes a signal to alter them ships whichever way you want. So I've brought this up. I said, do you know, I said, I have signalmen, young signalmen, on board the Ashanti who have never seen a manoeuvring board. Now, I said, supposing I'm in conference with the captain, the leading signalman may be elsewhere. I said, these young signalmen don't understand half these, because they've never seen a manoeuvring board. That was scrapped. So we got things sorted out. We got in the habit of, King George the Fifth. King George, we eventually got KG5. Cut time down, and in our own little flotilla we got Somali Som from Ash. Cut, you know, speed was most essential, or if you wanted something in a hurry you forgot the names, you just flashed the signal, which to us a second would know all the difference between being hit and not being hit. So as a flotilla we operated very well.
How many convoys, the Russian convoys, did you do? Any idea?
I think it was 9.
Were any of those, obviously, you take them out, bring them out. Do any of those, other than the one you've described, any of those stand out in your memory? Did you get involved in anything particularly outstanding? Or?
Well, as you know, PQ-17, you probably have heard of it. That was, I think, out of the 22 ships or something, I think only about 5 got to Russia. That was a convoy that the Admiralty made, Scatter. That was Captain Broom, Jackie Broom. He was the convoy. He didn't want to do it, but he had his orders, because they thought the Tirpitz was out. Well, we were at that time, we were escorting the fleet. We couldn't have done anything. We're too far away. But the convoy scattered. With the result, they were just picked off. And as it turned out, the Tirpitz never came out to sea. She came out the fjord, turned and went back in again. So that convoy was sacrificed. That was the First Lord of the Admiralty. They give that order. But you see, orders are orders. There is a book written by Captain Broom, PQ-17. He didn't want to do it, but he thought his position should go back and join the cruisers under Admiral Hamilton and give the cruisers some support. Maybe if they met the Tirpitz, while the cruisers engaged it, which would have been futile because she was too far, the destroyers could have done a torpedo attack. Well, it never materialised, and that convoy was lost. It caused a lot of ill feeling in America, that, because there was a lot of American ships. Now, we covered that one, and we come back. Then we got... down to Scapa Flow and into the floating docks, because we're having some trouble with our feed water.
Where now, are we getting to now? What time of the year? What year
we're,
are we
we're getting now...
It's 42, I would think, are we?
August 42. We come down in the Scapa Flow, and it was a bit of a paddycon, which we didn't know about. And when Onslow come on board, you know, secrets. He sent for myself and the petty officer, telegraphist. Now, this was 3 days before this big convoy. And he told us, in complete, we knew before the officers on board the British ship knew. Because we had to know what ships were going, to look up the pendant numbers in case we wanted to get in touch with them, the telegraphist to know which wave to keep watch on. And as it turned out, 3 days later, we set sail for Malta. And the big convoy pedestal.
So was this the end of your Russian convoys?
No, there's more to come. This was the convoy to relieve Malta pedestal, which, as you know, there was 15 merchant ships and I would think 50 to 60 escorts. All these big merchant ships, you've probably heard of the tanker Ohio. That's another story. So we picked up, we come with the Rodney. Again, the Rodney. We all seem to be with the Rodney. We left Scapa Flow and we picked a few up off Greenock. And then a few more joined from Liverpool. And I think one or two from Bristol. I'm not sure about that. Then we carried out exercises in the Atlantic on the way between England and Gibraltar. When we were to get to near to the Straits of Pantelleria, that was near Malta, were to get in to two columns, the merchant ships. We would lead one column, and I think the Manchester was detailed to lead the other column. But during the convoy, that went out of the window, as circumstances completely changed.
And you practiced these manoeuvres on the way down?
We practiced gunfire and all sorts, you know, oiling at sea, because, I mean, it was... to Malta from Scapa, 2,500 miles. And I mean, a destroyer always stops up to the top, because although she can do 7,000 miles economically, she can do nothing like that if she's at full speed, because she burns oil tremendously at full speed. So we get down to Gibraltar, went into Gibraltar and oiled there. We met the convoy through the Straits, and then the real rough stuff started. Because we were within range of all the Italian and German aircraft, ships, submarines, e-boats, you have it. We had a day's pretty reasonable sailing. I think we had about 20 destroyers, 2 battleships, 3 aircraft carriers, a number of cruisers, and we also had submarines covering Italian naval bases in case they come out, switch, and eventually they got out. The second day got a bit rough. We lost the Eagle, the aircraft carrier. The Manchester was badly damaged. The Illustrious was badly damaged. The Nigeria, which a Rear Admiral Burroughs on board, in charge of the whole operation with the convoy. The convoy was 4-6. She was damaged, so we went alongside of her. And trying to go alongside the damaged cruiser that was going in a circle, also was brilliant. And we got the Admiral on board, Admiral Burroughs. So from then onwards, we were the senior officer of the convoy. A little destroyer. We were over cruisers. Because we carried the Admiral, it was the... We had the bit rough passes through the Straits to Pantelleria.
These losses to what? Aircraft, submarines? What?
We had the aircraft cut. Oh, both. Actually, I think if you read again through the books, there was one submarine, the Italian submarine, that with a torpedo salvo hit three ships, which was a damn. I think she hit the Eagle. Would it be the Manchester? And then. We kept on losing. We only had 15 merchant ships. We only got 5 to Malta. We lost 10 through air attack, torpedo bombers. The Italians were very brave torpedo bombers, believe me. And
there must have been constant firing, constant...
Oh, all the time, night and day. Night and day. And when we come to the Straits to Pantelleria, as you know or don't know, there's a lot of rocky islands. Well, the radar couldn't pick the E-boats up because they were hiding behind. And they used to come out at the last minute. You cut them under a shirt light and hoped. We know we hit one. We know that for a fact. And serious of things, this will probably make anyone reading, listening, make sense. Well, I happened to be talking to Richard George Onslow, and we're looking over the side, and there were... two bloody great big green floating mines. And I thought, God, they'll be about 2 feet off. But the wake of the ship was taking them a little bit farther. If they had hit us, it would have been gone. So we got alongside and protected the Ohio a bit.
She'd been hit by then, had she?
Oh, there was an aircraft landing on her. German aircraft landing on her. And somebody says that we hit it and it landed on her. I don't know. But then we had to go back, and there were ships stopped here and ships stopped there with being hit and breaking down. And then eventually we got within sight of Malta. We turned them over to the Maltese local escort. But unknown to us, the Italian cruiser had left port and were coming to intercept. But by brilliant aircraft people... talking about we're sending a force of liberators and all this. They only had one. But they managed to turn the Italian fleet back. Must have been through fear. Now, all we had, the Italian fleet was coming down. All we had was the Ashanti leading 4-6. Behind us, the cruiser Kenya, with no bows. She had her bows blown up with a torpedo. And, of course, with no bows, she was sending a hell of a spray up. Behind her, we had the light cruiser Charybdis on fire. And we had, I think, 3 destroyers ahead of us. That was all that stood between the convoy if the Italian fleet had come down. Now, so we limped back, joined the main fleet under Admiral Snifrit. We dropped... When we took Burroughs off to Nigeria onto the Ashanti, his first words were when he came on, he says, what a lot of bloody pirates this crew. Because with all football jerseys and God knows what. Didn't stand any ceremony at sea, Onslow. As long as you'd done your job, that was it. But in the end, we got on very well with Burroughs. He was a nice gentleman. Then it was back to Scapa. Oil up. And lo and behold, you'll never guess. There was the old Rodney waiting to be escorted back to Britain again. So...
what was... the relationship between Burroughs and Onslow? You've got an admiral on a ship, and who runs the ship? What's the relationship there?
The captain runs the ship. It doesn't matter who's on board that ship. The captain is responsible. If Boris had said, we'll alter to port, Onze could have said, no, harder starboard. He is responsible. The admiral can give a rough detail of what he wants doing and make sense. But the commander of the ship remains with the captain, irrespective of who's on board. He is responsible for that ship. And on the way back, some silly things. torpedoes approaching. And you could see that the wake, you know, but they weren't, they were pawpaws. And at the last minute, they'll duck on menu. I've fretted a few times through those things. Back to jib. Take the old Rodney back to Scapa Flow. So over, as we got to near the north of Ireland, we said, oh, you'll be relieved from escort duties. You'll go to the Greenock and have a bit of rest. So we're looking through, and we could only spot two destroyers. They did get relief, but not the poor old Ashanti weed to carry on the Scapa Flow with the run. And once again, the cheering broke out for some, you know. So that was back to Scapa Flow. We're there maybe a few weeks, exercises, and then once again, back out to Russia. So we done May and June. May, we done PQ-16. June and July, we covered PQ-17. August, went out to Malta. Come back in September off to Russia again. So you can imagine, from the cold to the heat, back to the cold again. We didn't know what to wear. I mean, we weren't prepared to go out the Med. We should have been, because we could run anywhere.
You'd had a lot of actions, and as you say, you were rushing here, there, and everywhere. Was this having any effect upon you and your fellow seamen, from the point of view of not tiring sleep-wise, but tiring mentally and stress?
No, I think most crews stood up to it pretty well. I can't remember anyone ever not doing their duty. But you were glad to get back in harbour and get a decent night's rest. But you see, you couldn't. It was oil, stores, ammunition. In the end, I think the thing that was utmost in my minds in those days was protecting the merchant seamen and the merchant ships. I don't think we ever thought of ourselves. Now, a peculiar thing is, as I told you once before, when your guns swing round, you can practically, on the bridge from B gun, you can practically look down the barrel. And if you're quick, you can see the shell come looping out. Now, eventually, at one time we used to, eventually you got so used with the gunfire, you never thought of it. And the silliest of things, when you were maybe being attacked and you thought a bomb was coming a bit close, you used to duck down. And all there was maybe a 16th to a quarter an inch plating. If the bomb had hit you, it wouldn't be the slightest difference, that little bit plating. But in the end, we just stood there. And then you see four of us sailors with our tin hats on. I can never remember wearing one. Nobody did. Onzo used in the Mediterranean in the warm time, he used to wear a straw boater and sit in the back of the on the back of his seat with his straw. he gave everyone great confidence. And also the life belts, you know, if you're caught without a life belt, some of them never used to bother. You know, they were in such a hurry to get to the guns. Most of them used the life belts to blow up to make a pillow to sleep on. Oh, there were some great times. Even in action, funny things happened. You know, like I told you before, you would see the captain's cook. When it was captain's dinner, the captain's, he was normally a petty officer that looked after him. You would see him coming along the deck, and there he would have the captain's dinner in a little tray. And you buggered he would make it without spilling a bloody drop. your dinner is served, sir. You know, they were brilliant. And the cooks, how the hell they cooked, I do not know until this day. I never, I really admired them. And stokers down below in engine room department, we tried to inform them if we were opening fire or dropping depth charges, give them a rough idea. Later on, of course, we got a public address system, which the captain can tell everyone what a general rundown of what was happening. So that was that was it.
So you come back to the Russian convoys again, and were conditions worse now? This is coming into the winter.
Oh, Russian convoys in the winter is dreadful.
What were the conditions there you were working
Well, on? The sea's rough, and it's cold. Now, you probably... It may be interesting to some people in years to come. If you went to the back of the bridge and you didn't have time to go down to the toilet, you just relieve yourself at the back of the bridge, at the back of the control, the DCT, where nobody could see. Every bugger knew where you were going, like. And believe me, by the time we got to the deck, it would freeze. It was actually cold. Really, when I say cold, well, I showed you that photograph of the ice. In certain cases, you couldn't use your guns because they were frozen up. And when you did get back again to use, you had to chip the ice off them. They were just useless because it was so blasted cold.
Was it dangerous, the ice forming on the ship?
Well, some ship, it caused too much top weight. And you did... But I don't think any ship ever sank by it. No, I wouldn't say... Well, a destroyer's masts are thin in any case. But you were more... You could be action stations, but if you had no gun, I mean, sometimes they wouldn't even turn in the mountains because they'd throw it absolutely solid. And that was the trouble with the winter time. And the darkness, when the daylight come, you'd probably find yourself on your own thinking, where the hell is everybody? They would be away. You couldn't put lights on or anything like that. The PQ-18, which we'll come to now, the Admiral decided that cruisers were too valuable. So instead of putting cruisers close to the convoy, they withdrew them completely. And they instigated what became then known as the Fighting Destroyer Escort. That was the big fleet destroyers, like the tribals and the big boat, not the older pair. So, PQ-18 had, I would think maybe, we had 16 fleet destroyers with us. That was the tribals and the old boats, Onzo, Oraby and all them. And we had what we thought then was great. We had what we called a Woolworth aircraft carrier, a next merchant ship. I think she only carried about 10 planes. Was it the Avenger? Yes, we'll say the Avenger. And what a bloody good work she done. The Germans, between gunfire and the little aircraft carrier, lost 41 planes, which was damn good. I think she carried about 3 swordfish for anti-submarine, and I think about 6 Sea Hurricanes or something like that. But how the hell they flew with that deck till, I do not know. But by God, they were a godsend. Well, that convoy, halfway to Russia, we left in force to go up to Spitsbergen. Another couple of destroyers had escorted 2 oilers up there, into Spit, Bell Sound in Spitsbergen. And we used to slope off at night time, 4 at a time, oil, come back and relieve the oil. Because we didn't go into Murmansk then. We always had, normally, an oiler in the convoy to rely on for oil. But if she was sunk, we were beat then. Oh, we once had to oil off the cruiser Kent. So, now comes the bit. Coming back from PQ-18, we'll bring the remains of PQ-17 back. We got them all back to about not far from Iceland. And when we were on the screen, we were on the outside of the screen, and we sighted this U-boat. So we opened fire. I don't think they hit it right. It dived, and of course we got it on the Aztecs. Well, we dropped the majority of our depth charges. Whether it was sunk, I don't know until this day. When we come back, we asked Admiral Nutty Burnett, was the Admiral. You'll have to excuse the Nutty, but he was called Nutty, unknown to him, like Admiral Burnett. Could we change places with a destroyer on the inner screen because we had no depth charges? That was 20 past six. So we changed places with the Somali. She came out, went on our position, and we come in. And at 10 to 7, she was blown up with a torpedo. So we went out to try and get the U-boat. Never got it. So we decided we'd tow her. And this illustrates the comradeship. We took some of the crew off, and the little Lord Middleton, God bless her, a little trawler. What a good little trawler she was. She was the next fishing trawler, I believe. She went alongside and took a crew off. Now, eventually, when we got on tow, she was crippled. She was nearly breaking in two, actually. We run electric cable from our ring gear along the tow wire into the Somali, so she could work her pumps to a certain extent. And over and above that, we run a telephone cable along, so that Onslow could speak to Lieutenant Commander Mon, who was in the Somali's captain was ill. Lieutenant Commander Mon had taken over, so as he could speak to her and ask how things are going. Well, it was all right for a while. Eventually, again, we're running short of oil. Now, this is rather a funny thing. We met up with an oiler. I can't remember who she was. There was the oiler with an oil connecting up to the shanty, who was towing the Somali with our little motorboat behind, all in the one line. How the hell the captain of that fleet auxiliary got the oiler in there? Magnificent navigation and seamanship for this captain. And we filled up with oil, because we'd sprayed oil in the water to try and keep the waves down to help the Somali. But in the end, we towed off 340 miles. I think that was 4 days and three nights, or something like that. But in the end, she got so bad that we could see her, hear her breaking in two, and she sank. And she lost quite a few of her crew. We picked Mond out the water, had a bottle of whiskey in his hand, so the saying goes. I do not believe it. And we just scuttled back. Our intention was to tow the Somali and base her, put her aground in Iceland. But she sank. And that was the end of the Somali.